This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Post-show recaps theater presents Movies. So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at Post-show recaps, featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Post Show Recaps Theater. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host, Ariel. Ariel, how you doing?
Oh, man. I've been stuck in this tiny little bottle for so long.
I popped the cap.
It gets really cramped in there. Thank you for letting me out.
Yeah, you need like a massage. Like you like just like squish.
I'm going to need a minute. Okay.
Yeah.
So let me I'm going to loom large in this room for a little bit, and you're not going to be able to tell if I'm angry, but I'm fine.
Yeah, you're so big. You're much bigger than I thought you were. Seeing you now outside of the bottle, you're gigantic. Yeah. And naked.
Yeah. Holy Idris Elba.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about 3,000 Years of Longing, a fantasy romantic drama film. George Miller. This is the big George Miller film. His first one since Mad Max Fury Road, and stars Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba. Idris Elba having like the most movies in potentially the driest movie month we've had since we started a Post Recaps Theater. Good for you, Idris, I guess.
Poor guy. I mean, not poor guy. He's rich, but
I don't know. You and I were both kind of like, I don't know, maybe I do want to see Beast.
We've come around. I think now that it's the evolution of like interest in movies, right? That thing of like, oh, it's oversaturated. Or in this case, nobody was talking about it was undersaturated. Now it's like, that lion's just sitting over there. Maybe we should watch it.
Well, to put the gin bottle on the shelf for a minute. I mean, it is about to there. I feel like we're on the precipice of like the thing that you and I, when we started Post Recaps, they were both very much like, I can see all of the movies that are out. Like I can see all of them and I'll know exactly what's going on with movie pop culture, the whole thing. And I feel like because August was so dry, I'm kind of like, I guess the only thing left is Beast. I better see that before we start to get like Don't Worry Darling and Bros and Blonde comes out. And like, I think September is going to be actually a fairly busy movie month. Like, there's a lot of stuff I'm actually very keen to see. And so I just kind of need to check off Beast before.
If you haven't seen,
if you
like me, haven't seen DC League of Super Pets, this is probably your last week. This is your last chance.
Yeah. Do you know what the problem is in the movie theater is like 3,000 Years of Longing was not playing at the theater near me, which I kind of thought it would, but it's because they're trying to like get those last weeks of like, hey, you want to see Minions and DC Super League of Pets
and Top also Gun.
we're still playing Top Gun and we re-release Spider-Man No Way Home. So yeah,
it's summer is new again. It's the beginning of the summer all of a sudden. Beginning of the year really with No Way Home, but yeah, it is a very interesting time we find ourselves in to that to your point where people are just trying to get as much as they can out of what they already had.
I think it'll pick up. I think it'll start to be Oscar season. I believe. I know the Emmys are coming up.
You know, he's so fancy.
He's a fancy little gold man. Always painting himself goals, you know, and shrinking himself down. The opposite of Idris Elba. Yeah, he might be a djinn. Yeah. What if? Ooh, is this a movie script where every Oscar is secretly a djinn and then they get a wish? You know, my favorite movie trope. Not really. Is when it's a movie and it's like. Yeah, but this one is about actors.
Yes.
All right, we've gone on many a tangent here. We watched 3,000 Years of Longing. Let's give our like spoiler-free take. I'll give the quick rundown. It's the log line is pretty simple. Idris Elba is a djinn who's been stuck in a little bottle, and Tilda Swinton, who plays a professor, Althea. Olivia? I think so. Releases him, and they she gets some wishes, and they chat in a hotel room. That's the plot, basically.
Yeah, and it sounds way more when you put it like that. It sounds way more romantic than it. I mean, not way more romantic, but certainly way more physically romantic than it actually ends up being. In a way that I think is beautiful and positive.
Yeah, they're in a hotel room most of the time. I mean, I did make
in robes, literally in robes.
Yeah. I mean, Idris Elba doesn't spend like he spends a bunch of this movie. Like the costume budget was nil, I think, for Idris Elba. He's mostly naked, and he just has like weird things around his. Yeah,
they told him that they would put costumes on him, and they never did.
Yeah, I'm not saying we see anything.
No, right. Yes,
you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is naked for a lot. Oh, he's his butt. She's big butt.
No hot D to speak of.
No hot D. Yeah, that's another show where we do probably see lots of we did see anyway. Ira, what do you think? Spoiler free. What were your thoughts of 3,000 Years of Longing?
The George Miller return. I didn't know. I will say very quickly before the movie, before getting into the movie, I didn't know that this was the same director who also did Babe. And Babe, Pig in the City, and Witches of Eastwick, and Lorenzo's Oil, like in addition to Mad Max, and then the soon to be released, I guess, like extended Furiosa universe.
Yes,
this man contains multitudes, and I love
Happy
it.
Feet. Happy Feet,
right? The other one. It's like we need to check all the boxes.
He's had the wildest career. Like he starts doing, he's Mad Max, Mad Max 2, Twilight Zone, Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome, and then he's like, how about a movie about pig? How about that? Babe? And then how about penguins?
How about Babe? This man is and so appropriate now to arrive at a story that is about stories, right? Especially in the storied career of this man.
Nice.
I really enjoyed it. I am a sucker for a good Tilda Swinton vehicle. And as usual, she delivers here. I think, you know, there are probably some scenes or some storylines that she could be given a little bit more to do, but as far as really just having to emote and having to be a human in the world who is experiencing a very different thing, she has a really, really cool job. A narratologist, I believe is how you say it.
Yeah, I want her job. She just studies just stories. Right. Yeah.
Studying of stories, like Tyrion, eat your heart out.
That's right.
This is wonderful. It's so sweet. She looks so good in like a little bob and glasses.
Got the towel on her head. Yeah.
The towel. The way she flips her head over when she puts the towel in her head. Incredible acting from her. And Idris Elba, obviously nothing to sneeze at. Amazing actor. Seemingly from the outside, even though we haven't seen Beast yet, given more to do here than in Beast, perhaps more interesting things to do. I don't know. And it's just two like well-seasoned veteran actors basically putting on a play for a lot of the movie in a way that really worked for me. Yeah. And obviously I already said it's a story about stories, so we get a bunch of different stories. It looks beautiful, perhaps a little long, but I think it's a very sweet story that I will remember fondly.
Yeah, it runs in at 108 minutes, so even just under 2 hours. I definitely felt the length as well. I think that for me, the one thing that I was a little bit surprised is, to like expand on the plot a little bit, like that I don't think is spoiler. So much of the movie is actually about, like, you know, 3,000 years of longing. It's about the things that he's gone through, the djinn has gone mm-hmm. through. And it's him basically retelling these stories, because she's a storyteller, like thematically makes sense that he would tell her all of these stories of like how he basically not only just wound up as a djinn, but how he ends up, you know, in this hotel, in this room with,
well, in his hotel, that was that bottle. That was his little
that's
hotel.
Right. That's right. He overstayed his checkout, I think.
The latest checkout I have ever heard of.
Yeah, this one. Do you do a late check? I've heard of an early check. Do you do a late checkout? It's like 3,000 years.
Like, do you have a premium plus pass?
Yeah. And so I think for what Tilda Swinton is given, she does a really good job. Unfortunately, I think the thing that happens is this movie sort of falls apart a little bit for me once we're out of the retelling of the stories, because it's almost like there's so much to the stories that he's retelling. They're so like the visuals are really spectacular. It is, I think, too, like these are stories that we don't often like get in mainstream American media, which I'm also a little I think in the way that the movie was sort of advertised and build, I thought it was more about Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba than it sort of ends up being, although it comes around at the end. But I just like, you know, I love that they're like, you know, and they're playing on real historical figures, which I think is always really fun to like, you know, layer magic onto the real world. That's a big like a reason I was really enjoying The Sandman recently, is that like they play with all these like The Sandman meets William Shakespeare, like makes a deal with him, and that's how like William Shakespeare goes on to like write all these like incredible stories. Like I kind of love stuff like that these like these rulers in like in these countries end up like having a djinn, and how that like affects like the stories, like the real life story sort of ends up being impacted by like stuff that we would never know about, was really fun. And so I loved all that. And then I kind of feel like I'm like, oh, this movie isn't super about Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba, although then it is. And unfortunately, I think that's where like it sort of falls apart at the end. But overall, I think it's a visually stunning movie. It's really beautiful, which like I think George Miller with Mad Max does a lot of like visually stunning stuff. And obviously, like, have you seen Babe? Have you seen the pig? He looks incredible. And do you know who played that pig? Do you know who played that pig?
I think it definitely had to be Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson, yeah. I like that we got it in here without like, it's not even about her role in 3,000 Years of Longing. Now she's the babe. She's Babe from Pig.
I think she played one of the towels, though.
She did play the towel. Yeah, one of them. Not all of them, just one of them. Yeah, so I feel like that's where sort of like the movie falls. But my point about like it being visually stunning is that like Mad Max is like visually stunning in a way that's like somehow we're in a desert and it like looks amazing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was cool to get to see him sort of play with like the full color palette in a movie, George Miller. So I did enjoy it. I did have fun. This is a movie where I think the first two like thirds of the movie are like great. And then the last one, I'm like, that's fine. And I kind of walk out of it, which is unfortunate. You know, the end can sometimes taint your sort of, you know, the movie as a whole. But overall, I would watch this again. I'll probably dabble into this one. I don't know. I would say, I mean, in terms of like your typical, like, how fast should I go to the movie theater? Maybe do a slow walk to go see.
Yeah, that's true. Bring a book.
You'll be pleased. If you run, you're going to be out of breath and a little bit disappointed, I think.
And tired, yeah. I would say bring a book. And the book isn't for you to be reading during the movie. It's it's for your slow stroll on your way to get to the movie. Maybe you're waiting for the bus because there's no rush to get there. So I would say, you know, you can you can definitely, you can probably wait for this to get on streaming, really.
I mean, though, I mean, my one counterpoint is that, like, the best part of the movie is that it looks amazing. And
yeah,
so,
right. So, and you're never going to get that experience at home. Yeah, we, that's, yeah, that is so, 100% yeah. accurate.
I'm seeing a lot of, have you seen this with Rings of Power? People, like, posting gorgeous shots of the video, and then people being like, you idiot, you still have motion smoothing.
I think that's called a self-own, an yeah. auto-own.
I've seen it a lot on Twitter, especially because Rings of Power is like the most beautiful television show I've ever seen in my life. And mm-hmm. some people are like sharing screen, like videos, and just being like, yeah, you definitely have motion smoothing on. Just like, I don't think I can tell the difference, but like, cool. Good.
I feel like I would probably, it would be harder to tell the difference in something like that, that yeah. looks that hyper real right. in a way. But in right. general, like if you're watching, you know, sports or a soap opera, or not a soap opera, it'll look like you're watching a soap opera soap if opera. You have it on. Yeah. So.
I hope those are just all Tom Cruise alt accounts. Just be, you idiot, you still have motions.
Like, also, go watch Top Gun.
Also, Top Gun playing in theaters now. All right, should we spoil the heck out of this movie?
Let's spoil stories and what they mean.
I don't know the answer to that one.
That's not 100% what the movie's about, but it is about stories, which I love.
Yeah. So the movie is interspliced into these like separate sort of stories that he tells. I mean, we start with obviously her finding that whoever she's with, who's like, you should take the very nice, not like quirky bottle. She's like, no, I want the one that's like kind of burnt and like mm-hmm. very odd. I'm with you.
Yeah,
Alithia, what's her name? Alithia?
Alithia.
Alithia.
I'm with you, Alithia.
I'm with you, Alithia.
I agree. I'm normally, I call them, I would, in her place, I would have called it, no, it has battle scars. You know, it has like some wear and tear. It makes it feel almost human in a way, right? To like that, like a little bit of personification of like putting, you know, something human, imbuing something inhuman with a human-ish thing. I don't want your boring, fancy, clean bottle that like just got made. I want this thing that has history. She's a student of stories, as we keep saying. And she even says when she buys it, I'm sure it has a wonderful story or an interesting story.
Yeah.
And it does.
So yeah. So the first story he's going to tell is about Queen of Sheba, who like, boy, true fantasy is just like, this is his cousin. and also he loves her. It's like, yeah, all right. Can't be true fantasy without like a little bit of incest. Cool. Cool.
I was shocked. And then I was like, am I shocked? And then I was like, I'm a little bit shocked.
It's up to times. He's 3000 years old. You know, these
it's
old people.
The time. There were just like, also, if we're being honest, there were a lot fewer people on the planet, you know, like,
yeah, I think that's right.
It's been like exponential growth.
Yeah.
There weren't a lot of people to meet, you know. Tinder was much more limited at the time. It was actually just called Tinder Family back then.
yeah, they used to merge family reunions with speed dating.
Speed dating events. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But she's being wooed by King Solomon, a real life historical figure, who mm-hmm. imprisons the jinn in a bottle so that he can have Sheba all for himself. And you know, a lot of this story is, you know, it's about stories, but it's also about, I mean, what's the greatest story other than if it's, you know, not love, mm-hmm. you know, the first true, you know, emotion, love. Yeah. Because he's going to, you know, remember Jin. He's going to meet some other people who he falls in love with. And ultimately, this is going to impact like, you know, and the thing here is like he, until Althea chooses three wishes that her true heart's desire, he will not be free. He will not be able to go back to where he's supposed to be. And so sort of her refusal to want any wish because she believes that he's being a trickster, sort of like a notorious reputation of jinns is that like, yeah, like the monkey's paw wishes yes. that like, yeah, I want all the money in the world. And then like your house is filled with gold and you can't breathe stuck in there, you know, like that kind of stuff that she doesn't want to make this wish. She just wants him to go back in the bottle and go back. But he says, nope, I can't because now I'm like trapped with you. You need to make three wishes that are your true heart's desire or I'm stuck. So he's going to start to like tell these stories to you know, spend time to kill time, but also sort of get her on the path towards making some wishes.
Yeah, I love this part of it, of like, she is so knowledgeable about stories in general, as we keep saying, mm-hmm. it's literally her job. And that she is, and the movie in this way is like very almost, I don't know, tongue-in-cheek, like referential to all these many different things, where she's able to say, well, it always works out badly for the person making the wish. The third wish is always bad, or you find a way to, like, you being him, or in the case of stories, like a genie or whatever you want to call it, the person giving the wishes sometimes finds a way to, like, trick the people. And I love that, like, in so many of the stories, the person is so anxious to just get through the wishes, and they get, you know, they kind of F themselves over. Whereas here, she's so reluctant to make the wish, to make any wish at all, because of her knowledge of how these stories normally end. And in fact, she at one point tries to be like, maybe I'll just give you to somebody else. Maybe these wishes aren't for me. Like, maybe I can just pass you along to a more desperate person. I think it's a very clever way to tell another version of a three wishes story in a way that doesn't feel like overdone.
I agree. And I, you know, we joked about like him being giant and naked, but that scene where like he comes out of the bottle, the imagery, I mean again this is like am I every day becoming more like Kevin Mahadeo, on that I'm not sure I want to watch trailers, although I go to too many movies and Arrow, you know, so I can't not watch the trailer.
No, I would have to go and like sit in the bathroom for like 10 minutes to avoid the trailer.
I do sometimes when I like know that I've seen all the trailers that are about to come up, I do just like continue listening to my podcast. Not this podcast. I'd listen to other podcasts. That sounds so egotistical. I just like start closing my eyes, because the scene where like he bursts out of the bottle, and then you see the giant foot like in the doorway is so good. When he's like still giant and he's like speaking whatever language he's speaking and they're trying to communicate, and the way that like, I mean, they set up this very early that he's affected by like it's a very important part of the movie, is like what he's made of sort of is like magnetism, I guess, whatever,
fire, cool. They call it they call it a few different things, so
can you call your Dr. Amanda, we need a scientist on this pod.
Dr. Amanda is 5G
what are gins made of? is 5G bad for you? Yeah, he pulls like Albert Einstein out of the TV and like has him there, and it's like, I don't know, it's visually very, very cool.
It's super fun. And I love that in that moment she's like, oh god, that must be so weird for him, put him back.
I love it. So all this stuff is very visually stunning. And they do set up that like, we should say this, she finds the bottle in Pakistan. She's like at a conference or, doing a speech. So they're in Pakistan in the hotel room, but she's originally from London. So they set up all of that stuff very early on, that like, he can like interact with the TV and whatnot in a way that like will affect him later. The second real story we get is about Galton, who's a concubine in Suleiman, in his reign. And she wants the Mustafa to fall in love with her, and also to bear his child, which again, in sort of the monkey's paws, isn't perfect because she's a concubine, and this makes people very mad, especially his father, who ends up killing Mustafa, and also kills Galton before she can make her third wish, freeing the djinn.
She's dumb. I'm sorry. She totally had the option to... This is, by the way, this is my least favorite story of the three. She totally had the option to... Because I feel like it goes on for a little long and it kind of lost me.
It is the longest story.
Sons get older and then they're recast. And I was like, wait, is this the son? And then he has this... Anyway, but the girl... She has the opportunity to save herself by making the third wish. Jin is literally running after her, like, make your wish. They're coming to kill you. And she's like, no. And she's running away.
It's like the worst horror movie trope of like, don't run that way. Don't, you're going to trip. You tripped and you're dead.
Oh, you tripped. It's so silly and so dumb that she does it, rather. Not necessarily in the way it's presented.
The only thing I will say is that like the trap of the djinn is like, well, what do you even wish for in that moment? Do you, like, is your true heart's desire in that moment to like not be killed? But then like, I, what were we talking about? There's an episode of Sandman where there's this character who has eternal life and he's very like confident and brazen. And one of the characters goes like, that doesn't mean you can't be like imprisoned or mutilated or maimed. Oh, right. God. So it's just like, yeah, I know, dark. Uh-huh. Right. But as she's running away, like, what is she, you know, she could wish like, okay, don't kill me, but that doesn't mean you won't have an awful, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and to that point a little bit, like here, Jin is represent, you know, to the point earlier of this film referencing other genies, other jinns, other versions of the story. He is very helpful. Like he doesn't at all seem to be any kind of trickster in the way that Althea like accuses him of being a little bit in the beginning. He proves himself to be both in his interactions with Althea and in throughout these stories that he's telling of just being, of having compassion for humans and like the limits of their lives and trying to make it better. Obviously he has like the selfish component of you need to make these three wishes so that I can be free, but he really does try to help her, this girl who chooses to basically end her life because she's too proud or dumb to believe it. Oh yeah, it's just, it's that she like doesn't believe that the Sultan's son would allow any harm to come to her, but she doesn't know that he's dead, which the djinn tries to tell her.
So she's going to hide the bottle before she dies as well in the bathhouse, which will become an important,
which causes a lot of problems, let me tell you.
Well, he just like is now stuck here. He's like invisible, can't interact with anybody because he's stuck in the bottle. He can watch everything that's happening. But the bottle is found by these two brothers, Murad and Ibrahim. But they're unable to successfully get the bottle. Murad goes into war. He becomes an alcoholic later. Ibrahim is sort of the younger brother. I don't know. How did this I'm really worried. We're about to embark on a moment where there's a lot of buzz for, this is a very random tangent area, I'm so sorry, but Brendan Fraser's The Whale, where we're both incredibly excited for Brendan Fraser to have like essentially an Oscar worthy performance, and also he's going to be in a big fat suit, and so I think we're like as a society going to reckon with like that in like 2 months or so, where like I think that the fat suit has sort of had its moment. But so I will say in this movie, I don't think anybody's in a fat suit. It's just that I'm torn here because I do. Ibrahim is played off as like a bit of an idiot that like this guy can never be. He's very gross as well when like his mom, like they like open that little like the like secret window, hatch window, and he like puts his hand through and it's like covered in something. I don't know what it is. It's disgusting.
I don't want to know.
I don't want to know either.
And no.
Yeah. And so he's played as like he's never going to be king anyway because his brother is king. So whatever, don't worry. And he's just sort of like a slob and an idiot. And he just wants to like sleep with like all of these like bigger women and whatever. That's fun. And then
his mom totally puts him in prison, basically.
Basically. But like in a sexy
prison. A different kind of prison. Yeah.
He eventually does become king. He's like dragged out of there, but he still like chooses to like have all these concubines. And on one hand, I'm like, you don't see a ton of representation like that, I think, in movies either, that like it's just a bunch of like plus size women like in the scene. But then also they're kind of played like literally the way they find the bottle is that she, one of the women who's like his favorite concubine, gets out of the bath, slips, and literally like sits on the like the slab of stone that like breaks it, and underneath they find the bottle. So I'm a little like, yeah, not perfect, not great, but, you know, I don't know.
No, definitely play for laughs in a way that is at least, you can say, it's not laughing at the character as much. Like, there's a little bit of, like, laughing with the character because the character's fine. The character doesn't have any kind of emotion about it. The character isn't, like, embarrassed because she's alone. But still, I agree. It's a little bit, like,
People laughed in my theater, you know.
For like, sure. It didn't have to be this. It could have been anything.
Yeah. She will find it. Isn't her name? Her name is also Sugar Lump, I think, as well. So that's not great. He is so desperate to be free after all this time that he's like, please, you have to make a wish. Please, come on. And she's so scared. And also, again, you know what I will say in this scene, she definitely like In the same way that like Althea is like, no, I'm not making a wish. You're tricking me. She's so like, I'm not scared of you. Like, get back in the get back in the bottle. So she does wish for him to get back into the bottle, and then it's sent back into the middle of the sea and just on the floor of the ocean.
By like a bird. Yeah, that was pretty disturbing. Like, when is this bird gonna stop flying?
No, never.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Whether you're making a delicious family meal or a post-workout snack, choose the farm fresh taste of Eggland's Best Eggs. Only Eggland's best hens are fed their proprietary all-vegetarian feed. That's what makes their eggs more nutritious. With 10 times more vitamin E, 25% less saturated fat, and 6 times more vitamin D compared to ordinary eggs. Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com to learn more.
So the third story we get is of Zephyr. A fish just ate the gin bottle. I love that. I love that she's like, go to the sea, and then a fish just ate it, and it like comes out of the fish later that they're like scaling. Mm-hmm. And so she is the youngest wife of a Turkish merchant she gets the bottle and she wishes for knowledge. And this is where he sort of like, this is the most, I think, in terms of like, nothing is a trick here. He's like, you know, sort of falls in love with the idea of like being her teacher, right? He just like is like constantly just like, it's not that she just like knows all knowledge, it's that like he slowly teaches her knowledge. I really loved this stuff of like, I mean, sad, a lot of the stuff in this movie is sad, right? We're talking about like concubines and this young wife is obviously like, you know, married this man against her will, and we're like repeatedly interrupted from the knowledge scenes with like her having to like pleasure the merchant. But I love this. I love this stuff of like they're growing affection with each other.
It's sweet. I think this one feels like in a way like the most human story.
I agree.
Like the you know, the first one, it's King Solomon, but like let's give him like a supernatural twist, and like I really appreciated that. To your point about like historical figures being affected by like magic, basically. But here it's just like a girl, a woman who wants knowledge. Like, and in the story about stories, she kind of gets to learn the ultimate stories about like life and why things are the way they are. And she gets like way more knowledge than anybody else, seemingly any other human has. And to see that play out and like how they love each other, but the knowledge is kind of the thing that gets in the way for her is pretty interesting.
This is the only one that's not, doesn't have like a real historical figure. Like the first one has Sheba and Solomon. The second one has Murad and Ibrahim, who are both real rulers. And so this one is the only one that's like, it's just about a Turkish merchant, right? Who's like sort of like unnamed as far as we know. And so just about her. I do love this. That one of the things I love it in I've been talking a lot about how there's some fantasy out there right now, looking at you, House of the Dragon, where like, yeah, the stories are about often like women suffering. And this movie is about that as well. Pretty much every woman we meet in this movie, except for Althea, suffer, right? Like Althea, yeah, we could talk about like living in whatever society. So, but for the most part, she's like a pretty successful, like she's successful at her job. She's independent. I mean, I love the beginning of the movie, her being like, I don't need anybody, you know, like I'm okay to just be me. And I like that I have my independence and you know, I'm good. And so what I like about this Saphir story is so much of like the patriarchal systems that are set up in place, you know, are about if you limit women from being able to gain knowledge, you can sort of just keep them in the dark and keep these like patriarchal power systems in place. Are you snoring at me?
That was me snorting, not snoring.
Is my story so boring?
No. I was snorting at the horribleness of that idea that has been perpetuated throughout history.
Well, recently, like in Afghanistan, like the Taliban has recently, like, they were like, yeah, we're going to let women go to school. And then they're like, but not high school. Not high school. You can't go to high school. No. Right. And so it's still happening that, like, limiting women from knowledge. There's this idea that, like, yeah, that will, like, you know, mean that it will be harder to, like, you know, work your way up. And so I love this story of, like, just Saphir being like, I wish for knowledge. And then just getting to, like, it's not just this instantaneous, okay, you're the smartest person in the world now. It's like, no, she has access to be able to, like, gather knowledge. And just, like, it's the thing she's enjoying doing. And he watches her as she's doing it, like, and he falls in love with her, right? That he falls in love with just this like woman who's doing this thing she loves. Like, I mean, this is like a, you know, I think this has been like tweeted a million times, but like how much, like, I love like hanging out with somebody and someone just talking about a thing that they love. And I'm like, I like that you love that thing. Like, even if I don't love that thing, I love that you love that thing. Like, you know, makes me like them more. Yeah.
When the person can be in, I agree with the sentiment in general. Yeah. When the person can like demonstrate passion in a way that is inclusive and doesn't feel exclusive of you perhaps being outside of that thing, but the passion still being contagious, I think that's like a beautiful thing that we all share. And like, obviously, you know, more so with friends or romantic relationships, it means a lot.
Yeah. So I really love this. She eventually is going to get pregnant by the Turkish merchant. But she also like is feeling a little bit like boxing. She gets a little bit paranoid with the gin as well. And he is so in love with her that he says, like, I'll live in the bottle. I'll just hang out in the bottle. Like, I love you so much that I will sacrifice, you know, my future, which the whole movie, I think this is done really well, that like the both the beginning of him being like, really, I need you to make three wishes so that I can be free. Mm-hmm. And also when he gets found by the concubine of Ibrahim, he's so desperate. He's like, please, come on, you have to wish. And so the fact that he at this point is being like, I'll just go hang out in a bottle. Like, I love you so much. I don't need, like, you know, I'm just going to give you some space by hanging out in this bottle.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's like, what if, like, I think this might be the answer to a lot of marriages, you know, certainly like during quarantine,
though,
we spent too much time together. It was like, somebody needed a bottle that they could just like live in for hours at a time.
Yeah.
And it would be helpful to both sides. And we need this technology now is what I say.
I can agree more. Yeah. We should get big bottles that we put husbands in. Yeah.
Husbands specifically. Yes.
Unfortunately, she wishes at the exact same time that she wishes to forget she ever met the djinn. And so as he is entering the bottle, she fulfills the last wish. He fulfills the last wish and thus imprisoning him once again in the bottle that we have seen Althea come to possess.
Yes, finally, because we had seen him like in the gold little bottle and like other bottles that aren't the ones that we met him in. So we kind of knew throughout the movie, like, oh, this isn't even the same bottle. Like, can you, you know, you're kind of like anticipating the introduction of our bottle, if you will.
So this is where the movie pivots pretty hard to back to Althea and the djinn. And I don't know, what did you think of this moment where she finally asked for a wish? So she's been sort of like jokingly granted. She's like, I would like to have a cup of tea. And she like, I'd like to sip of tea. And she like sips her tea. It's like, wish granted. And he's like, you are making fun of me.
How dare you? Yeah.
I like it.
Because the cool rule is, and I like this about this version,
yes,
like in other versions, that would have been the wish, you know, like sometimes like all you have to say is the word I wish, and then that's it. You're locked into it. But here
baby.
The element of like, it has to be one of your heart's true desires, if only in that moment, and you know, her fake wishes aren't going to be good enough. So, you know, it isn't until later on. Like, I do just love that part about the movie. We already talked about this, but we spend so much of the movie just like waiting for her wishes, or perhaps thinking that the wishes are never going to come. Like, we, you know, there was an ending where she just never made the wishes, but then, you know, what happens to him? But she's too smart. You know, she can't be outsmarted by the wishes.
Not, but this is where she makes her big wish, Ariel. Mm-hmm.
Wishes that she would not see demonic creatures anymore. Like the really, really creepy beginning of the movie, that was not okay. I have to say.
That's pretty bad. Yeah.
It was not good. It looked like the Pope. I just have to talk about it real quick. It looked like the Pope a little bit, but like really creepy face. Mm-hmm. And he kept the fact that he kept getting closer and closer, I think, is the truly creepy part of the ghost.
Yeah. No, she's going to wish for the djinn to fall in love with her. And I don't know. This is, to me, I think, the point where the movie falls apart a little bit. I can totally see the like point George Miller is trying to make in this movie, because we're going to get to the end where like she's going to say like, you know, I messed up as soon as I wished this, I no longer gave you the option. Like I just feel like the metaphor here is so heavy-handed at the end, which is like, you can't be forced to love. Love is a gift that you choose to give to someone else. Is exactly what he does when he chooses to go into the bottle for Zephyr. Like, it's something you give willingly to people. And as soon as she makes a wish to wish that he's in love with her, he can't willingly give her love. There's no point where, like, you know, and there's a lot of stuff actually in here that I think is like actually a good metaphor for like consent as well, that like you know, basically like, and this is a thing I think people don't understand about like certain power structures, that like as soon as you're in that power structure, like there's really no way for someone willingly, and it's so hard to decipher when that thing, like, yeah, if they do one day choose, it's like, oh, I'm not doing this because you're my boss. I'm choosing to do it because I'm in love with you. It's so hard to know when that moment happened. And if that second happened, like, would that second thing have happened if not for the first thing? And so in this moment where she makes that the wish, it's suddenly he can never really willingly offer her true love. And so I think that the idea is good. I feel like the execution is a little clumsy. I don't know how else you do it. So I'm a little bit like, yeah, I don't know. This is just where, like, I think the movie, it feels like such a heavy metaphor. I feel like the stuff before is like really good, pretty good metaphor. And then this is like, it feels a little like, really, you just wished for him to love you? Of course he can't now say he loves you, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think I had a similar reaction, but for a little bit of a different reason, because I think that it is somewhat interesting. I think if I'm remembering correctly, a lot of these stories, it's like, oh, I wish random other X person to be the one that falls in love with me, as opposed to like you being the magical being, please fall in love with me. So I think the consent metaphor lands, to your point, it's more heavy handed, right? So it lands like a little bit more clearly. Like, I hadn't thought of it in that way, in the way that so many people think about consent when it comes to magical wishes. But
I know I'm sorry I brought up such a tired
no but it's absolutely true. But the thing that for me was the bigger almost like record scratch moment is when she kind of turns around. Her motivations for this elude me. Like, I don't understand how she gets from, and it's the fact that she's so sure of it. She, at one point, she literally turns away from the camera and she turns back around and she says something to the effect of, I understand now what I'm supposed to do.
I've never been more sure, or whatever. Like, yeah.
The person who is very happy to be alone, who in some ways, it's not that she doesn't believe in love. She just,
She doesn't need it. I mean, it's a thing that I think
it isn't the be all end all like it is for a lot of people, certainly in these kinds of stories again.
And I do love that because like I feel like that's me sometimes of like, I'm not in the relationship. And it's like, sometimes like, I look at like my brother and his wife and my other brother's getting married. And it's like, I guess it'd be nice to have, but like, maybe I don't need that. Like life is certainly like, you know, I don't mean to be like the plight of single people, but like, you know, everything's on me, you know, whatever, but like, I like seeing her just be like, so content to be alone for whatever reason that was. Yeah.
She's living the Joan from Mad Men.
Yeah, that's right.
Best, right. Like, I'd rather be alone than be in something artificial or unhappy or fake or whatever.
Right.
And for her to, I can understand that there would be an evolution of that. Certainly under the within the context of you have been told these stories and you have seen all these magical things and he has like literally changed the way you see the world. I think that's valid. But I need to understand ultimately the motivation of why you're now saying my purpose in this moment was to, or my purpose in like finding you was so that I could wish for us to be in love because that's the only way I was going to find love or the only way I was going to understand love in this way. It's a little bit like of a very far leap in a way that even an actor as incredible as Tilda Swinton cannot quite bridge that gap, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. And I think this is the part where I'm saying that like so much of the beginning of the movie is so much not about Althea and the djinn that I feel like if they had of, gosh, I don't know that I want this. So the tricky balance here between like Althea being a character who is happy to be independent and ultimately makes a wish to be in love is like, would I almost rather her not be this like independent woman that I would rather her sort of like, is it better to just be totally tropey and for her to be like wanting love and think she finds it in the djinn who like she sees as a good person, like if he's a person, he's a good, you know, creature being, entity that like does all these things to try and like, you know, help these people who end up, you know, finding him and getting to make wishes from him. Like, is that ultimately better to sacrifice this idea of like her being the strong independent woman? Because I feel like it almost like this idea of like, you know, if we never knew that she was an independent woman, like, you know, and was okay being alone, like, then can, you know, someone who chooses to be independent, it doesn't mean they can't also be in a relationship. So I don't know.
Fold this into the Bridget Jones universe.
That's right.
Because that's clearly what you're saying.
It is what I was saying, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's just, like, something here doesn't mismatch. And I'm trying to, like, couch that with, like, well, I come back to this movie 5 years and be like, oh, now I actually get it and I understand it and I, like, love it. Because, like, I feel like what I'm asking is, like, for the movie to be more tropey. And I don't know that that's the answer either, for her to just be, like, this, like, love, you know, lost person who's, like, I just need to find true love. So I get, you know, and I don't pay attention to love. So I focus on my work. And, like, that's her character. Because I don't think that that's necessarily better either. So I don't know. But so, yeah, we get this, like, they move to London together. I do like the scene of, like, she takes him home in a salt shaker and her like in the airplane. When they get back, there's too much like electromagnetism. London is a busier place than I believe they're in Istanbul before. And so while it goes okay for a while, eventually he continues to like sort of suffer these like effects of being unable to speak, sort of being like, he almost has like grayscale from Game of Thrones.
The 5G gives him grayscale.
Yeah, we all knew it was 5G. It was
crazy.
Evil. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, we all knew that spilling salt is bad luck. And now we know why. Because you might be a djinn who lives in there and then you get grayscale. So
it's true.
You might as well just stay in the salt shaker.
Yeah. And so eventually she's going to wish to set him free, so that he's able to return to the realm of the djinn. And just when you thought that was the end of the movie, nope. She's writing the book, telling the story, and she sees the djinn and he visits. And they say that every once in a while, he just comes and visits and they hang out. And he also does cool soccer tricks. And that's the end of the movie.
And so the movie really is saying, not only do you need a glass bottle to hide your partner in for hours at a time when you're annoyed by them or what have you, but also it's better. You're better off being in a relationship where you only see them a few times throughout your life.
Yeah, like the real long distance relationship, which is not just like long through time, but literally through interplanar dimensions in another realm. He literally lives in another realm. So, and he should be very good at. He should be able to do cool soccer tricks.
Yeah, so it's just clearly like an Idris Elba thing of like, look at me, I have this accent, so I could do cool tricks.
I can do it. Yeah, I don't know. This for me is, again, like it's the weakest part of the movie. I think that probably could be a thing that like, I think my biggest takeaway is like, I get it, and I just don't think it totally works, which is totally fine. It's totally fine.
Yes, not every story is for everyone, but I think we definitely still got a lot of enjoyment out of it. And yeah, the end is a little bit, there's also this element besides the neatness of it, or perhaps lack of neatness, which, you know, she would probably say not all stories end neatly. So, you know, spit in my face. But
yeah, I feel like all the stories he tells end in tragedy. I want to listen. I like dark movies. Give me a tragedy.
But there are all these like fade outs that they do throughout.
There's so many fade outs.
I keep thinking, oh, is this the end? Oh, I hope so. Or in some of them, it was like, I hope not. I hope there's more after this.
I've been doing this bit with A League of Their Own where we watch it and be like, oh, they're gay? Oh, they're gay? Yeah. Oh, they're gay? And I feel like in this movie, it was like, oh, that's the end? Oh, that's the end? Oh, that's the end? Oh, soccer trick? Oh, that's the end? I'm never going to get over that he just does a cool soccer trick at the end of the movie.
Now he's going to be in next season of Ted Lasso, and it's him and Althea are just going to be like walking in the background. No lines.
In his life. Yeah.
With his mermaid bottom half. At first I was like, is he a centaur? Is he a mermaid? We don't know.
Yeah. We said he was going to be naked. He just has like weird blue scales around his like, you know, parts. Yeah.
So that's, you know, good for him for having something to wear. But yeah, that's the lovely end to a lovely story. I mean, you know, she's pulling the Samwise Gamgee. It's really the Frodo, right? The Frodo. Wrote the Lord of the Rings. Like that is the name of the story.
I know it's a little silly.
In the way that I think it
and
does.
Movies about storytellers.
The opening is her saying, just like you would see when you read a book, right? Of this is a real story. I am telling you the truth. This really happened. Blah blah blah. And then the payoff of it is she wrote those words in a book. And as a student and teacher of stories, she wrote her own story. And, you know, there are probably people who would say, well, then that means that this didn't really happen and it's all a story. She would say, and I would agree with her, who cares? The point is that the story means a lot to her and it's real to her. And that's all that really matters.
Yeah, I think this is a movie that I think like probably like in a few years, there'll be like people, because I know some people who went to go see this like multiple times in the theater. So I think this is going to be a movie that like, you know, there'll be like a certain group of people who will be like, oh, you haven't watched 2000 Years of Longing? It's great. Like you should watch it. Which like, I'm delighted that they have that. I am excited. We used to do this.
Or the 3Kers.
Yeah. We used to do this thing where I would ask you like, how long before you think you rewatch this movie?
At least 3,000 years.
3,000 years. Yeah, I got to go get in my little bottle. I think I'll watch this movie soon after it hits streaming. Cause I think I do want to re-explore it and see if I can sort of find meaning and like the moment she makes that wish to see if it will still work for me or not. But I think this is a movie that I liked more than I didn't like. So that's that's plus, especially in August.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We think back a year to where you and I started and we were talking about Jungle Cruise.
Is it a year? Is this like our year anniversary, Ariel? This it's pretty soon, right? I think I'm gonna check it out.
I booked like a band to come play, but I wasn't sure about the date, so I had to cancel it.
August 24th was our very first Push Whoops Theater. We missed the anniversary, so oops.
Happy belated anniversary, Grace.
That's right. Yeah. You too. Yeah.
It's been a wild ride. Thankfully this movie is better than Jungle Cruise. I think I can say that fairly certainly.
Not better than Green Knight. Green Knight's the other fantasy.
You know, Jungle Cruise only.
I mean, this movie didn't have Jesse Plemons as a Nazi, so I don't know.
I did have that on my bingo card, but unfortunately I did not get bingo. I only got Ngo. So, you know. But I'll probably have to wait like at least a year before I see this movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe Christmas. I changed my mind.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be back next week with another a film. There's a lot of stuff coming out. So I think exactly TBD on what we'll be watching next week. We'll be back soon. Next week, Ariel, I'm very excited. I'm going to be attending my first ever TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival. And the first thing I'm going to see is a TV show.
The way God intended.
That's right. Going to go see 1899. I'm very excited about.
For you. Yeah. I'm so excited for the TIFF. You inspired me, and I went to look up NIFF, the New York Film Festival, which is happening now, or is about to happen at the end of this month.
Ooh.
And the first thing I did was look to see if 1899, the TV show, was playing, and it was not.
Oh, too bad. Do you think they'll let me record the episode for you? Probably, right?
Absolutely. Well, I thought you were going to say, well, they let us record the podcast from the show.
Yeah. So right now they're getting on a boat. That's me in the movie theater. I'm gonna try to see some other stuff. I got my whole agenda. There's a lot of stuff I wanted to see that I didn't get tickets for, but and I don't think I'll get them because Knives Out sequel. That Knives Out sequel booked up immediately.
Ooh, people are hot to trot. Yeah, I imagine.
Yes. But that's okay. So we'll be back next week. In the meantime, Ariel, what else you got going on?
Oh, wow. There is so much going on Pusha Recaps, the Discord. That's like what the movie would be called, of the Discord. Pusha Recaps, colon, the Discord.
It is the beginning of the month. It's a good time to become a patron of Pusha Recaps to access the Discord.
This is exactly what I'm saying. You and I are on the same page in the story that we're telling. It is a great time to become a patron of Pusha Recaps. You get an ad-free patron feed of the podcast. You get patron-only podcasts. You get like merch store discounts depending on what level you subscribe at. And you get access to the Discord, which you meet crazy people like you and I. Crazy, very kind, wonderful people.
That's right.
But besides that, I am also covering, Dr. Amanda and I just wrapped up the Resort coverage, covering the Peacock original Sam Esmail produced show, The Resort. Mm-hmm. And now we are keeping our tropical theme and we are entering into the White Lotus Zone, as I just made up. It's like, move over, Twilight Zone. It is White Lotus Zone. And we are rewatching season one in anticipation of seasons to premiere in October. We don't have a premiere date yet, so we're kind of, you know, flying by the seat of our pants. But we are doing a full season one rewatch with some special guests, perhaps. We're doing one episode at a time, and that is launching this week. So look out for that. And I think that is it for me. I'm on Twitter at that other Ariel. And Grace, you are also on Twitter. You should tell me about that.
Yeah, I just very cool. I cannot wait for the specific Armand scene. I very much can't wait to hear you and Dr. Amanda have to talk about that scene. So I'll be tuning in. You know what? I recommended White Lotus to my mom, and then mom was like,
"Ariel is no longer covering."
If you know, you know, folks. Lots happening for me here on Post Show Recaps, including we're wrapping up our A League of Their Own coverage, wrapping up our The Sandman coverage, and What We Do in the Shadows. Actually, the finale of that is this week as well. So lots of shows on the downswing, on the end, but House of the Dragon is still going strong. Episode 3 aired this week. Mike Bloom and I jump on the pod immediately after the episode, give our immediate reactions, get that pod in your feeds as quickly as humanly possible. This week, we were joined by the wonderful Pooja Zambakili to chat through all of his takes. He watched all 3 episodes in one day and then came on to chat with us immediately after. So that was like very fun.
Fire, like from his nose.
He's had some hot takes. And then over on Reality TV Wrap-Ups, we cover sports with the Offspeed podcast. And I launched a new show over on Rob as a Podcast, a YouTube Twitch show moving forward called Roll Call. We're going to play some board games each month. Rob, Pooja, and Frail Mary joined me to play Settlers of Catan, which was very fun. We played the longest game of Catan that's ever happened in the history of the world. 3,000 years it took, I think. But it's very fun. And we're going to do that monthly. So every month we'll play a different board game with a different group of podcasters. I'll invite people to the table and we'll play. Very excited about what we have coming up in October. I'll just say, if you're a Game of Thrones fan.
Super exciting. Ooh, a tease. If you're a Game of Thrones fan.
Yeah, you might be interested in what we're gonna play. So
I just realized you meant B-O-A-R-D, not B-O-R-E-D.
Right.
Board games. Right. So wow, this is a great idea.
Yeah, it's just us like napping while we like play cards. Yeah. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. Anything else I'm doing, check it out there. We'll be back in a week's time. Until then, I'm Grace. That's Ariel. We are Kosher Recaps.